Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
Every day at Sierra, you'll find top brand apparel, footwear, and gear for 20 to 60% less than department and specialty store prices. And during clearance time at Sierra, those incredible prices are 40 divided by 2.5, carry the one, even lower. And when you shop clearance at Sierra, you can save a whole lot more on everything you need to get active and outside. That's a lot of saving. Epic brands, vast selection, teeny tiny prices. That's Sierra. Visit your local Sierra store today or shop online at Sierra.com.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who has covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically, the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio on a Tuesday of 49er playoff week. I don't know how many of these we will have, but let's take advantage of it. Let's talk some Niner football with ESPN 49ers writer Nick Wagner. You all know him. Some of the best stuff out there on any team on ESPN. Nick, how you doing today? Good to have you on.
I'm doing well. It's good to be back. And I have to admit, I don't know when the last time we talked was, but if you'd asked me, we'd be sitting here talking playoffs at that time. I'm not sure what my answer would have been.
Yeah, it might have been back in camp, maybe something like that. And it definitely was a different kind of season. We'll go big picture in a little bit. But since I've been talking all big picture last few days, let's talk little picture. They're playing in Philadelphia on Sunday. This is obviously not a great draw from them. But the way Vegas opened it as only two and a half point dogs, it's been moving, maybe just because of the injury updates. I don't know. I would have thought it would have been four and a half anyway. Still gives them a chance at this, Nick. I don't know. That doesn't seem to be the feeling I have. You know, a chance. Yes, a chance, but it's not a great chance. Vegas seems to think that this could be very well a one possession game. How are you seeing this? Like, do you think 4 points is about right? Do you think the 49ers have a really solid chance to win this?
It's funny because I feel like Vegas feels like the fans feel. So last week, Tim, and this Twitter is by no means a good gauge on like the actual pulse of fans, but it is kind of funny to watch, right? So last week, the Niners and the Seahawks are playing. Both sides, fans were like way overconfident in their team. Like, we're going to kick your butt. Your team stinks, blah, 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 blah. This week, just a week later now, it's the opposite, where both Niners and Eagles fans are just so pessimistic about their team's chances. In the Niners' case, because of injuries. On the Eagles' case, I'm seeing just significant hatred or dislike for the offensive coordinator there in Philadelphia. And so it's kind of fascinating. And I think that maybe Vegas, in their minds, is just like they're just not sure what Eagles team is going to show up. And there's probably some truth in that for the Niners, too, although I think we kind of know who they are at this point, or at least who they need to be if they're going to win the game. But, yeah, I would think that by game time it's probably closer to 4.5, something like that. Yeah. I just, especially with the Eagles, a couple injury updates. You know, it sounds like Lane Johnson is going to practice this week. If he comes back, and I know offensive linemen don't move lines, but just when you're started to work into, like, putting the injuries on the Niners side versus the guys coming back for Philadelphia, N'Kobe Dean, the linebacker. I think Vic Fangio said this morning he's going to be back this week. So there are things that work in their favor. And of course, Philadelphia with the extra week of rest because Nick Sirianni decided to rest those guys on Sunday. I think there's a pretty significant advantage in that regard. It's going to be tough. There's no doubt about it, Tim. I think with Philadelphia, it's just a matter of, is that offense going to do anything? Because we have seen them go literal halves, entire halves, without completing a pass or doing much of anything. And the Niners defense doesn't seem qualified to be the kind that will keep them to doing that. But it seems like Philadelphia, a lot of times when they struggle offensively, it's because they can't get out of their own way, not necessarily because of what the defense is doing.
That is a great point. The Vegas line probably is more affected by the Eagles fans being very disappointed in their offense than it is like the 49ers going like, who do they have on defense? Like that's it's a competing, contrasting pessimism maybe. And I guess the 49er thing's more a larger picture. You could see the path if they were at home. They could maybe draw some lower seeds. Now, even if they can knock off the Eagles, can they go knock off? Like, it could be the Seahawks the next week. And then after that, it could be the Rams or whoever, or the Bears. What's the path for the 49ers to win this game, though? Like, you mentioned the Eagles offense sometimes stalling out. Is it just get a lead early, have your defense hold them down? Maybe, like every other opponent, they miss a field goal or two.
Yeah.
And it wins a low-scoring game? Or do you think the 49ers still have to score 24 or 27 to win this one?
I think it might be a race to 20. And I don't know. You know, I think the forecast from a weather perspective looks pretty good. It doesn't look overly cold or windy or rainy or any of that kind of stuff. No precipitation. So I think that probably at least favors the Niners a little bit in the sense of not having to worry about, because if you come into this game and you say, what are each side's strengths? It's the 49ers offense and it's the Eagles defense. And that's going to be kind of where the game is decided. But I don't know. Philadelphia just hasn't looked explosive offensively all year. And now it's not, it's so many games that it's not just a small trend. Like, this is who they are. Right. And so I think when you look at it from that perspective, it's like, can the 49ers coax a couple of turnovers? And I know I say that every week, but the thing that I harp on with that is you got to squeeze them when they're there. And the Niners have not, they have done that a lot this year when it comes to fumbles. They haven't necessarily done that when it comes to interceptions, but even last week, I was saying it going to the Seattle game, like, there's going to be an opportunity somewhere in there, and can you squeeze it? And Yetur Gross-Matos couldn't squeeze it. And then they convert 3rd and 17, and the game is effectively over. And so there's probably going to be a couple of chances like that this week. I'm sure Philadelphia doesn't want to throw the ball a whole lot, but if the 49ers can slow down the run, Philadelphia's run game has not been nearly as good as it was last year. On paper, if you just look at their offensive line and who their running back is and who the quarterback is, you would think they'd still be really good, but they've missed Lane Johnson a lot. The interior of their offensive line hasn't been nearly as good as it was last year, although they've been banged up a little bit too there. So if the Niners can at least slow down the run, which they did not do last week against Seattle, but if they're more like they played against the Chicagos and the Indianapolises, which both looked like they were going to be tough challenges in that way, it at least gives them a fighting chance to put Philadelphia into, you know, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6 or longer, and then they have to throw the ball, and then at least you have a chance to get off the field.
Yeah, well, put it on Jalen Hurts. I think that's always been their plan. And I do remember that it wasn't that long ago, that December 2023 game when the 49ers went, there was a highly hyped game. Debo had been talking. The Eagles DBs had been talking back to Debo. And the 49ers just went in there and kicked their ass. Maybe the height, you know, was Brock Purdy playing like an MVP, Christian McCaffrey playing like MVP. That's a team that was going to go to the Super Bowl. Any way they can match that formula? I mean, maybe not 42 and maybe not totally stuffing the Eagles, but do you see that as something they're looking towards? Like, this is the model for what we have to do?
The hard part for me, Tim, is Philly's a lot better on the outside at cornerback, just in corner in general than that team was in 2023. But I say that with the caveat that the Niners carved them up, if you remember, over the middle of the field in that game. And they took advantage of the linebackers and the safeties. Philadelphia has also improved at linebacker since that game, and with some of the additions they've made, Zach Bond in particular, and some of the other guys they've brought in. But I think safety is still a point where there could be some favorable matchups. And covering George Kittle, even for a guy, some of the linebackers that the Eagles have, is a difficult task anyway. And then you throw Christian McCaffrey in the mix, and that's a difficult task. 40 is a bridge too far. I'd be very surprised if they hung 40, but you also can go back and look at that Bears-Eagles game that took place, was that Friday, the Black Friday right after Thanksgiving? And the Bears ran the ball over them, which was kind of jarring to see because that front four of Philly is so stout and so big. But I think there is a path to the Niners scoring some points. It's just going to have to be a lot of working the middle of the field, which I'm sure Vic Fangio is going to want to take away. Kyle Shanahan historically has struggled against Vic Fangio defenses. And so this is going to be a whole different look, both schematically and in terms of personnel, because those two young corners for Philly, are outstanding. Mitchell and DeJean are both really, really good players. And so having Pearsall back would be significant for the 49ers, if for no other reason than one of those corners can be occupied by him, and it will allow some of those other guys some room to work, particularly in the middle of the field.
I was going to bring that up. I can't wait till the first question of Shanahan is, you've struggled against Vic Fangio's defenses in the past, Kyle. Your thoughts? It is a great – he respects – obviously, these two guys respect each other. They're two guys at the top. What do you think about the Fangio system gives a Shanahan offense some trouble? Is it the middle of the field?
Yeah, I think so. They pack things in a little bit, and they also find ways to kind of unique ways. You know, he's exotic blitz guy, exotic pressure packages, things like that. And that puts a lot of pressure on a lot of people. It puts pressure on the offensive linemen to communicate, which can be difficult, particularly when you're on the road. It puts pressure on the quarterback to communicate. It puts pressure on the quarterback to recognize where those blitzes might be coming from. A lot of times they're not coming from where you think they are. He's not afraid to blitz his defensive backs. You know, they use Cooper DeJean in a lot of different ways. He's just very, and they're very fundamentally sound on top of it. They do well against the run. So Vic Fangio's defenses traditionally are very hard hitting, very physical. I mean, I don't have to tell Niners fans that. They know exactly what that looks like from the Harbaugh days. So yeah, it's going to be a tough test. It's a little different though. Like, you know, it's interesting because you said Shanahan's going to love those questions. He got those questions about Jim Schwartz when the Niners played Cleveland, and it was the same type of thing, but very different kind of schematically. You know, wide nine with Jim Schwartz, a lot of similar things to what the 49ers actually try to be defensively. Fangio is not necessarily that. But there is some elements here of Fangio running things that the Niners have had some success against, like from former Rams defenses, 3-4 looks and things like that. So again, a lot of that comes down to those individual matchups in the middle of the field, when it's linebackers, tight ends, running backs, safeties, like that group, when you condense it kind of between the hashes a little bit.
I hate trying to guess on injuries, but I'll make you do it. I think Trent Williams obviously is such a massive part of this. Any sense on if, you know, I've always said if he doesn't practice on Wednesday or Thursday, they'd almost ever never play. Now, playoffs is different and Trent's different. He may not have to practice on Wednesday and Thursday to feel ready, but you thinking Trent Williams or Vicky Pearsall play in this game?
I didn't get a great vibe when Kyle Shanahan talked about it on Monday, just in the sense of he delineated between day-to-day and we'll be evaluating them throughout the week, which implies day-to-day. And basically what he said was, if a guy is day-to-day, it means he has a chance to practice on Wednesday. Evaluated throughout the week means he's probably going to miss some practice time. Now, Trent Williams always misses some practice time, even when he's healthy, because he gets that veteran rest day on Wednesday. Having an extra day should help. The fact that they play on Sunday instead of Saturday should help. I just got just totally vibes that Trent has a better chance than Ricky, maybe, just based on the way Kyle framed it. But, you know, Trent has played before in the playoffs after basically not practicing on Wednesday or Thursday. If you go back to 2021, week 18, he missed that Rams game and then played the following week against Dallas. So there is a path for Trent. I think it's a lot easier than it would be for Ricky. The hard part for Pearsall is the position that he plays. You know, the amount of running that he has to do, the chances of aggravating that PCL injury is always much higher. So if I had to handicap it, I say Trent has a better chance than Ricky, but I'm not going to sit here and make any bold proclamations on either one of them on a Tuesday afternoon.
Aggregate the hell out of that one, man. That was bold. I just would think they could probably guess that Trent, even if he's not practicing, has a better chance of gutting through it than Ricky Pearsall, who could take one more hit and be out again, and you're down a receiver. Just the way, like, Kittle's become very, very the guy to listen to on some of these. He goes, yeah, we'll get Trent back, and maybe we'll get Ricky back. And that is sort of telling. But then, yeah, you might not have Trent. He might, after three plays, right? You never know. Hamstrings are really, really difficult.
And he's never had one. First time in his whole career, he's had a soft tissue injury. So it's hard to deal with those when you don't have a history of doing it too.
Yep. And what happens if it just make it worse? So that's part of my Wednesday, Thursday theory anyway with the 49ers, is that not only does it mean that they're not feeling great and probably won't be feeling great on Sunday, it also means they're not preparing for the game. Like, they're not going through the reps. And I think Shanahan really believes in that. The guys have to prepare for the game. You can't, you know, some guys less than others, but, and Trent would be one of the very less than others, But man, it's just the reps are important to be in the mood, to be in the mode, I should say, to be playing on Sunday. Who's the defensive player who steps up in this game? I don't even know. Eric Kendricks now is the star of that defense.
I was going to say, Drew, can I even name the starting linebackers? I don't know. I can't. As we sit here right now, I don't know that. I found out yesterday that they have a linebacker named Andrew Farmer II on their practice squad. I didn't even know that. So that just tells you kind of what they've been through at linebacker. But yeah, I mean, to me, that's all eyes are on the linebackers because and the safeties to some extent. I mean, the safety play. Last week was not good. It hasn't really been that good all year. The linebacker play was not good last week. A lot of missed tackles. That's stuff that I don't know that's getting corrected. I just feel like a lot of times when you get this far into your depth chart, particularly at linebacker, it gets really, really difficult to see how those guys are going to match up when they have Saquon Barkley coming downhill at him with a huge game and in big stakes. So, would I expect it to be Eric Kendricks at middle linebacker? Yes. Other than that, maybe Curtis Robinson on the weak side and Garrett Wallow, who I know a lot of people didn't even know he was on the team until last week, including you, who they claimed off of waivers, I think on December 6th or something like that from Denver, December 8th, maybe. Yeah. And then you got Jalen Graham and Farmer on the practice squad. Like, there's just not a lot of, there's a scenario, Tim, where they have to use their practice squad elevations on two linebackers and sign Kendricks to the roster so that they have enough to get through the game. Like, that's not out of the question. A quad injury for Luke Gifford, quads are not easy to deal with. And D Winters, that ankle thing isn't great. So, they have to get much better. I think that Kendricks should maybe be at least a bit of a stabilizer a little bit because he has so much experience and he has been around and probably a little bit more sure tackler than some of the other guys. But, you know, Curtis Robinson went from starting middle linebacker to healthy scratch, which kind of tells you what they thought of how he performed when he was starting. So there's all these things at play right now that I think it makes it really hard, but those are going to be the guys that I think are going to be the most important because even if you're giving up 5 or 6 yards on a carry, you can't let Saquon Barkley turn those into 40, 50, 60 yard touchdowns by whiffing on tackles or taking a bad angle or whatever. And we saw that a lot last week from the safeties and the linebackers.
Really, to me, feels like first score. If 49ers give the first score, they're going to be in some trouble.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA cleared and CE marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
They might be in trouble no matter what. Almost feels like they should take the ball if they win the coin toss. I know that's my own personal thing. Almost feels like that. Here's a good point that Guy Haberman brought up. Given their history in playoff games in Philadelphia, could they use a third quarterback? Could they have Adrian Martinez on this roster? Be very non-Kyle-like, but man, I almost would be tempted to do it.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's an interesting thought. Yeah, I'm sure they won't do it. And just because of the roster numbers and what they're going to need at linebacker, it's probably not going to be possible. And shoot, they might need another receiver too. Like Jacob Cowing gets his window opened. And if Pearsall's not available, do they want to throw Cowing out there for the first time this year in such a huge game without any? I mean, who knows? But there's just so many different moving pieces this week that makes it so hard. And that's also what makes it hard to see a 49ers victory. But again, this team, they embraced it after the game. Kyle Shanahan with maybe the quote of the, at least of the young year so far of 2026, saying, you know, you got to embrace it. And that's
got to embrace the shit out of it. You got to
embrace the shit out of it. Yeah. I didn't know of how family friendly this show was, but
if Kyle can go there, we can go there. I'll put it that way.
Oh, that was Kyle goes there a lot. So that's,
he said it pretty quietly. And I was like, did he really say that? Like I was asking everyone down. Did you hear that correctly?
I did. I turned to, I was using the quote in my story and I turned to Josh Dubow. I was like, did I hear this right? He's like, yep, you did. So yeah, that's there you go. But yeah, I mean, this is who they are, Tim. This is what this team, they were always kind of have to kind of scratch and fight and claw their way through this season. The fact that they got to this point at 12-5 is a testament to what they've built here, but it is going to absolutely be the toughest challenge they've had, at least in terms of a first round playoff game since Kyle has been here.
No question. You know how much I love the discourse on quarterback. You know how much I love pre-discourse, like preparing for the discourse. But I will do some of that here. I don't think this is going to be a Brock Purdy discourse game. I mean, it might turn into it. We know it always might turn into that. But, if your left tackle is not going to be 100%, maybe not even playing, you don't know about Ricky Pearsall. You know how good that Eagles defense, it's on the road. It's going to be in the cold. I don't know. Like, maybe if he throws three picks, different thing. But I don't see the route for him to dominate this game in a way you'd want a great quarterback to. I don't know that Patrick Mahomes would dominate this game. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, how do you see Brock Purdy's role in this one?
Yeah, I mean, the 49ers are kind of at a point where the offense has to, not kind of, they are at the point, they've been at it for over a month now. They have to, the offense has to do most of the heavy lifting, and that inherently puts a lot of pressure on Brock Purdy to be the guy who carries the offense. And obviously you have Christian McCaffrey, you have George Kittle, those guys are playing a significant role in that. But, you know, everyone's always going to want to turn these into a litmus test with Brock Purdy. But to me, Brock Purdy's already got his playoff bona fides. Like, we've seen him win playoff games. This is not like, ooh, you know, it's not like Sam Darnold, for example, right? Like, with the Seahawks, that's, I think, the most complete team in football. But the question you have is how does Sam Darnold do when the lights get brighter and the games get bigger? They only have, we have a very tiny sample size of that not working out. With Brock Purdy, we don't have that. We've seen him win a lot of games. We've seen him get to the Super Bowl. The question is, can he win a Super Bowl? If, I will say this though, Tim, if he goes out and has a huge game and they win, yeah, it may be the game that this, at least in today's fast food world yeah, where everybody just wants to go off of what the last thing was, it may do more for his reputation than any other game he's ever played if he kills it. I don't necessarily think it would go the other way because people are going to be setting their opinions or whatever regardless. But if he does have a huge game, I think in terms of the discourse, it would be very fascinating to see because then it's like, oh, he didn't have the Avengers or whatever people like to say a few years ago. He did it on the road in a playoff game against a really good defense. I think that would be, it would be interesting just to see the way that was received nationally if Brock Purdy was able to pull that off.
I think, man, the way he can do, the way you're bringing up a great point, the way he can do it might be with his legs. Like, really might, you know, he's going to get some pressure. Can you get the 7-yard run on 3rd and 5, the 2-yard run read option to, into the end zone to get you that 23rd point, 24th point? To win the game 24-20. Great point. I wasn't even thinking that way. I was thinking just negatively. I was always negative on this. It is to me. Now, again, the whole discourse could go in some other rampaging way. It always does. But that is, this is a way that he can really solidify who he is, maybe more so than completely get wrecked, although who knows, that might happen too. I want to talk a little big picture. Obviously, you've been in that locker room for so many years. You know these guys as it's developed. What's your just – we've all documented the injuries and, you know, the offseason, all the people that got rid of the offseason and Brock Purdy getting hurt and Mac Jones still getting to 12-5, even after that disappointing loss to Seattle. What's your kind of feel for where this team is mentally? Management, I feel, was always sort of pointing to next year anyway, but obviously the players can't think like that. Where are they? Like, are they just, I mean, I don't want to say happy to be here. They're never just happy to be there. You want to win. But would it be a successful season if they play a pretty good game and maybe lose in Philadelphia on Sunday?
I think so. And it may depend on kind of how that would go, how that game plays out. But I'll say this, Tim. I talked to a few players over the last month or so, and really right around the bye, I was just chatting with guys off the record, not for anything I wanted to write, but I just wanted to get a feel for how they feel about the team. Like, do you think you guys are legit, like, capable of making a run? Like, how good is this? Whatever. And like, to a man, the responses I was getting, and these were from some kind of like higher echelon 49ers players, they basically were like, you know, one thing we're really enjoying is being the hunters instead of the hunted, like having it in a situation where people don't think we can make any noise. And that's okay. Like, we've had that for so long where everyone talks about Super Bowl windows and all that kind of stuff. And like, why can't we just go out and win? And the other thing they say, and I think we've all talked about this all year, is this is as wide open as the NFL has been in a long time. And I had one player who mentioned to me, and this is maybe Niners fans don't love hear this because it affected their love of the team a while back, but can Brock Purdy be the quarterback that gets super hot in the playoffs like Joe Flacco did the year the Ravens won the Super Bowl? Like, it may not be Brock Purdy, but it could be somebody, right? Like, this is that kind of year where it's open enough that one quarterback catching fire at the right time could be the difference between winning a Super Bowl and not, where you could have a 6 or a 7 seed making a deep run in the postseason. So my feel is that, yes, of course, the veteran guys, especially the ones who, like the Trent Williams, where there may not be as many opportunities to win the Super Bowl, they're not going to be thrilled if they go 1 and done in the playoffs. But I certainly think the head coach probably would believe that they're a little bit ahead of schedule from where they were, at least from a record standpoint. I think the big question really to me, Tim, is I still, and I think I harp on this every time I come on your podcast, is like, they've got to start figuring out who the next nucleus of guys that they're going to build around is. And even though some of these young guys have showed promise, I'm not sure any of them have really stepped into that role right now. So especially with Brandon Ayuk likely being subtracted after this year, you've got Brock, you've got D'Amador Lenore. And then after that, you know, you've got a couple of bridge guys who are going to be around, Warners and Bosa's and those types of guys. But who are the next guys? Because right now I think they've drafted a lot of good complementary players, but they're going to have to start drafting stars again here pretty soon. And none of those guys have revealed themselves as such yet.
I think most reasonable people understood why they weren't major players at the trade deadline, but you get to the spot and you're going to play the Eagles, who gave up a third round pick for Jalen Phillips, who's been really good. You think there's any regret, or should there be some regret? They didn't cough up a third round pick and maybe a little bit more to try to get Jalen Phillips. We know they liked him, right? We know that's someone they would have been interested in. You know, Trey Hendrickson they love, but he was hurt. There was no, you know, big push to get him. Jalen Phillips, I think, is someone that they came close to getting. Any second guessing on that one?
I think a little bit. Yeah, I think so. And like, Kyle Shanahan is maybe one of the most honest coaches in the league, and both with the team and about the team. And he was telling us actively, Tim, you were there, yes, and asking, yes, the questions.
Yes, yes.
He was actively telling us, like, I don't view this as a team that is a piece or two away. And the irony of all that was, like, everyone was saying they got to make trades to replace Bosa and Warner. And I think they would have been more inclined to make trades if they still had Bosa and Warner, because they would have felt like, especially with it being kind of a wide open year, like, oh, like, we're a lot better. And if you have Bosa and Warner right now, a lot of people are looking at this team as a favorite. Maybe they are the one seed. Who knows? But it would have probably looked a lot different. So I think there's probably at least a little bit of regret in the sense that it just got so bad. You got down to so many guys down the depth chart and off the practice squad and all that at certain points that adding another body who is capable of creating some pass rush would have been beneficial, undoubtedly. But I also think they would tell you that they're a little bit ahead of schedule. They're playing with house money a little bit. I know fans don't like hearing that, but it's just the truth. And if they can get these guys the reps that they need this year, get playoff experience under some of these young guys' belts, they can go out in the offseason, make a couple more moves, and potentially be like legitimate contenders next year, at least for so long as they're healthy, which, you know, is always up in the air.
Max Crosby, is that a name that you would circle for them?
I wouldn't say no to it. I certainly think they would be interested. Can I throw another name at you?
Please.
I'm just going to put this out there. I don't know how it's going to go, but Justin Jefferson. I think that's a name to keep an eye on. I don't know how that's going to play out in Minnesota, but I know this year did not go well. I know the Niners very much like Justin Jefferson. It did. Of course, the whole league does. That's how Max Crosby's market is going to play out too. But moving on from Brandon Ayuk, like, this is a team, and Juwan Jennings is a free agent, and Ricky Pearsall can't stay healthy. Like, I don't know that you can just go and say, well, let's spend a high draft pick on a receiver and that's going to solve our problems. Like, I think they're going to be big game hunting at receiver. And I don't know if it's going to be that big, but I'm just putting that out there for, since we're talking.
That's a good one.
That could be out there.
That is a good one. Would be Kyle's best receiver of this era. No question about it. All respect to Debo for that great year, but just that's like be a Julio Jones, right? That was Kyle had Julio Jones and he just knew he could get the ball to him every single time. Wow. I like that one. Way to go. You're going to get me thinking on that one. You know, that would cost a lot of money. We'll see where they are in spending wise, but they are saving a ton of money by not paying Brandon Ayuk. They've made all these moves to have more cap space, more salary flexibility. Woo. That's got, I've been thinking Crosby, Trey Hendrickson, but that's even better for just lighting up interest around the world. I want to go to your piece. You sat down with Robert Saleh not too long ago, and he does not give many sit-down interviews. I can count them on maybe one hand. I thought it was really interesting. I thought you really put it together, like what he's done, the quarter system that they're playing, kind of bend but don't break, but that's been fantastic for this season because they're allowing yards but not many points, kind of forcing the other team to go on drives. He definitely, you know, we all know he's interested in being a head coach somewhere. Is this something like you think, like, you know, he's saying I can have luxury now, not just jumping in anything, but there's not that many head coaching opportunities that ever come available. Is this something that you would think he's going to run to, or is he going to be a little bit more paused and like, I can do another year here?
It's really interesting, Tim, because one of the questions I asked him directly was, how do you thread the needle between I want to be discerning and get in a better opportunity and a better situation than what the Jets had. And by that, I mean like ownership and the issues that they had, of course, versus you got to strike while your name is hot. You got like, look at Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff Kingsbury was a hot candidate last year for head coaching jobs. And now he's not even an offensive coordinator anymore as of this morning. Yep. So like it can change in a heartbeat. So his answer was, I definitely want to, he made it very clear he wants to be a head coach again, which I think we all know and expect. And I think he'd like to do it sooner than later, but he also wants to take advice more this time. He wants to hear from people who he trusts and believes, which of course he's got no shortage of those guys because he's really close friends with a number of head coaches and high profile coordinators around the league. I think Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan, he mentioned both of those people as people that he wants to lean on a little bit more this time in terms of getting advice. And that makes sense because you know what? Robert Saleh went to New York where the ownership situation wasn't great. And obviously that franchise has been a mess for a long time. Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan both experienced that in Washington under Dan Snyder. So they've seen it from both sides and they both had success in places like Mike in Denver and Kyle here in San Francisco, where they have owners who are fully supportive and give them the resources they need to succeed. And so I think that is going to be maybe the big driver for Robert Saleh and what he's looking at. Of course, he would love to have a quarterback and all that kind of stuff, but these jobs are open largely because those teams don't have that. So for me, I think when I look at whether Robert Saleh is going to be a head coach again soon or this offseason, I think it's infrastructure is the word I would use. Like, what is in place there? What kind of relationship does he have with the GM? Are they bringing in a new GM? All of those things. And so it is not a super hot coaching cycle in terms of big names. I think Saleh will get interviews. If you ask me right now, my opinion's probably changed in the last month on whether he would he'll get a job or leave this offseason. I thought very strongly that he probably would about a month ago, and now I'm leaning more 50-50-ish. But it just takes one, right? It just takes one opportunity. I think Cleveland, I think Tennessee will be interested, and I think the Raiders, which we were very interested last time, will also be very interested. But I would be very curious to know how he feels, particularly about the ownership situations in Cleveland and Las Vegas.
Very fine. Very strong owners. Let me tell you, those guys, just perennial winners. You can just see it right there. And now, does he have a relationship with Tom Brady in Las Vegas? It's going to be very interesting things. All right, Nick, great stuff. I'll let you go here, but I do have to ask you a version of question I ask everybody, and I've asked you before, but never this one. And Nick and I have a running conversation about these things, so I'm really anticipating the answer here. Nick, what's your favorite restaurant right now?
Right now, you ask me at a good time because I just over the holidays, my mom and sister come out and visit, and they like to go every year, but this was the best visit we've had yet. Sam's Chowder House, mm-hmm. Half Moon Bay. I've been there with you, so you know this is not a surprise to you, but the lobster roll is off the charts, and I have never gotten a lobster roll like I did a couple days after Christmas when we were down there. It was, I sent him a picture. He can vouch for this. It was basically like a whole thing of lobster and a little bit of bread.
Yeah, I don't even know if you, I don't think you even saw bread in the picture that you sent me. It was
Right. I had lobster falling off. It was unbelievable. It's so good. I strongly recommend it. They have great views. They're friendly, good service, the whole thing. So it's not super fancy, but it doesn't need to be because it's really good and very welcoming. And I always love going there. So that's shout out to them.
No free ads, except for if they want to have some ads, they come on down. We'll be there. We'll do a show from Sam Chowder.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, put it out there. I'll make that trip in a heartbeat. No question.
The picture that he sent me was unbelievable. I'll just say this was a borderline obscene amount of lobster pouring out over onto that plate.
It's tough to beat. It's tough to beat a day at the Old Course at Half Moon Bay, followed by a lobster roll at Sam's Chowder House. That's for my money in terms of just hanging out and having a good day. That's pretty tough to beat.
I love it. You're making me want to play golf and you want to make me eat lobster. But that's every day, Nick Wagner. Every day.
Same.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow down at 49ers. Obviously, we got a game coming up in Philadelphia. Thank you so much, Nick. This was great. And hope to have you on again some point soon. Maybe sooner than we did. I don't want to overwork you. You do a lot of other things, but it's always great to have you on. Thanks so much, Nick.
Appreciate it, Tim. You got it.
Everybody, it's the show for today.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.